that there were four of her, so I could love much more of her. She has taken my complete heart. I got a sweet tooth for my sweetheart. Candy is gonna be just dandy the day I take my candy and make her mine, all mine. It's gonna be just dandy when I take my candy and make her mine.
I'm starry-eyed and breathless, trembling with emotion. Never felt such ecstasy. I'm tingling with excitement, thrilled by what I'm feeling, holding you so close to me. My heart is wildly beating, I can hardly stand it. Who knew love could be like this? I'm burning deep inside me, feel like I'm on fire with the magic of your crying silent tears, feeling so alone. You took me by the hand, led me to a world that I've never known. That's why I'm starry-eyed and breathless, dancing on a rainbow. Life's a great big valentine. You made me glad I'm living, living for your loving. Since you said that you
is the end of a beautiful friendship. It ended a moment ago. This is the end of a beautiful friendship. I know, for your eyes tell me so. We were always like sister and brother, until tonight when we looked at each other. That was the end of a beautiful friendship, and just the beginning of love. Mm-hmm.
Have to use my gavel. are we on? Okay. My name is Paula Perotti. I'm Goleta's mayor, and I have the privilege of welcoming all of you this evening. Great turnout to our Goleta City Council chambers. This is our City Hall, for those that may not have been here before. We are welcoming the State Lands Commission. We've offered our room for them to be here tonight. This is their presentation, and the City of Goleta will have our own community meeting. Well, as soon as we gather a little bit more information and really understand better the scope of State Lands Commission's jurisdiction. So I'm here this evening, like many of you, to learn where we are and where are we going. You know, I can guarantee you that the City of Goleta's top priority is during this decommissioning process, we will protect public safety and our environment, and we promise to keep you all informed of developments along the way. So, thank you for being here. I'd like to bring up Doss Williams. Supervisor Doss Williams would like to say a few words, and I'd like to thank all the other agencies that are here. There's many of you here, and I'm so glad that everyone is here and here tonight. So, Doss?
Thank you, Mayor Perotti, and I'll speak to them, even though I'm hoping to speak on behalf of some of the sentiments that many of you have. First, you know, I grew up looking at these facilities weekly, if not daily. I want to say that the removal of these facilities is important, I think, to the county, but particularly to the communities of Goleta, Isla Vista, and the Elwood neighborhood in particular, all of those being communities that I lived in growing up. And we've been used to all the negative impacts, including hydrogen sulfide releases that did used to happen with regularity at the facility in days gone past. And many of us have been involved with battles with them going back as far back as the days when they were tankering oil, when they were the last operation to tanker oil off the coast. I just want to make sure there's some things that don't get lost. In the attention that's spent on Platform Holly, there is the onshore facility, and removal of the onshore facility is really important to the community. And of course, financially, there seems to be many places where there may be, where we may be able, where you may be able to fund removal of Platform Holly. But the question is that many of us are asking ourselves is how will the onshore facility be removed? And then just, you know, I think one of the questions that probably many of us have is what does removal look like? What is the time frame? What is the likelihood that bankruptcy court and going to Exxon will yield necessary funds to do all this? Because I now represent the first district, which includes Summerland. And of course, we have so many abandoned oil facilities off the coast of Summerland that we're still cleaning them up. Thank you very much for doing some of that this year. But I'm hoping that we won't be still having to clean up this mess decades from now.
Thank you. Good evening, and it's great to see everyone today. We weren't sure what kind of crowd we were going to get, and this is wonderful. So thank you all for spending your evening with us tonight. My name is Jennifer Lucchesi. I'm the Executive Officer of the State Lands Commission. I wanted to just do a little housekeeping items first to ensure that we have all of our bases covered, particularly in terms of speaker forms. We have speaker forms out in the lobby where you can sign up to speak or ask questions, or just sign up for our email list so that we have your contact information to be able to keep you all updated on the progress that we're making on all of these different levels, the decommissioning, the bankruptcy proceedings, and other activities that impact your community. So please, if you haven't already, please go out, fill out that form so that we get you on our mailing list at the very least, and we can also call you up for questions if you have questions of us. The purpose of tonight's town hall meeting is twofold. One is to give you a status update on where we are with Platform Holly and Piers 421, but most importantly, it's to hear from you all and to answer your questions. You are an incredibly informed community, and we know that, and so we really want to make this tonight about you. So my initial presentation is going to be relatively short and give you just kind of the highlights on where we're at progress-wise and some background on what led us here. But I'm really interested in answering your questions and addressing your concerns and hearing those so that we can take those into consideration as we move forward. I'm very pleased to be able to introduce you to some of our state agency partners that are here that we are working as a team with to address this issue. So first, I want to introduce the state's oil and gas supervisor, Ken Harris, who's right here, and along with his senior attorney, James Pierce, that we are working hand in hand with them on a number of different things, but specifically the Venico bankruptcy and the decommissioning of the offshore facilities. We also have in the audience Yvonne Adasi, and who is the chief of preparedness for OSPR, along with two of her managers, John Victoria and Bob Chapman, who run the local offices. And so the three of us state agencies are coordinating closely to ensure that as we move through this decommissioning process, we're doing it quickly, efficiently, and in the most safe manner that we can. I also want to, and they are all available to answer questions if those can be better answered by those folks. We also are very thankful to have our air pollution quality control district representatives here, along with the City of Goleta staff and the County of Santa Barbara staff as well, to help answer and supplement any answers to questions that may come up. So finally, I want to introduce my team. And we do have a very robust team that this is their priority, working on Venico's decommissioning of those facilities and representing the state in the bankruptcy proceedings. To my left is my senior attorney, Seth Blackman, who many of you know because he's involved in almost everything that goes on down here that involves the State Lands Commission. And then our other team lead is Jeff Plank, the Assistant Division Chief of our Minerals Resources Management Division. These are our two team leads in pursuing this effort. In our audience, we have Marina Voskanian, who's our Chief of our Minerals Resources Management Division, and Steve Curran, who is our Chief Engineer that is helping us not only on the platform and Piers facilities, but he's also leading the remediation of the Becker Well in Summerland. So many of you probably know him from that because he's extremely active in getting that completed. And finally, we also have Eric Gillies, who's the Assistant Chief of our Environmental and Planning Management Division. So with that, I will get right to it. One last thing, another housekeeping. This meeting is being streamed through the State Lands Commission's website, or you can watch it on channel 104.148, the Cox subscribers channel 19. And it will also be rebroadcast on channel 104.148. Channel 19 for Cox subscribers on Sunday and Wednesday at 12 p.m. and at 6 p.m. That is an incredible asset to have. I'm very pleased that the city is televising this. And so I will get started. Can we, is it, it's pulled up. Great. So let's go on to the next slide. So why are we here? What happened? It's been, it's actually, it feels like it's been a long time since Veneco gave us notice of what was happening with their company, but it really just goes back to the late part of May and beginning of April of this year. So a couple weeks before April 12th, 2017, Veneco had reached out to us informally to let us know that they were having some challenges meeting the terms of their lease and were thinking about filing for bankruptcy. During those initial conversations with them, we scheduled an emergency meeting of the State Lands Commission. And for those of you who don't know, the State Lands Commission is made up of the Lieutenant Governor, the State Controller, and the Director of Finance. They make all the decisions as it relates to the jurisdiction and authority under the state under the commission. And we held a special meeting to deal with this impending situation that we had a little bit of time of heads up, but we weren't sure was going to happen. At that time, we started negotiating with Veneco on a temporary services agreement in the event that they were going to quitclaim their leases back to the State Lands Commission and abandon the properties. That was our first goal, was to ensure the security and safety of the facilities offshore. They formally provided notice to us that they were unable to meet the terms of their lease on April 12th. And 5 days later, on April 17th, they, the morning of, they submitted their formally submitted their quitclaims to the State Lands Commission. A couple hours later, they filed for bankruptcy in Delaware with the objective of complete liquidation. So what does that mean for Veneco? That means that in about a month or two or three, they will cease to exist. So we were faced with a very serious situation. I want to be clear that we'll get into the facilities that, and the leases that they actually quitclaimed back to the state and what they ended up keeping to go through the bankruptcy process. But in short, they quitclaimed three leases back to the state, including the two leases that cover Platform Holly and that reservoir, and the one lease dealing with the Piers 421, the two offshore piers. They did not quitclaim the four other leases that they hold with the State Lands Commission. Those leases include the Elwood Marine Terminal, a couple leases offshore, Carpinteria, the Paradon leases, and an inland gas lease that's located up in the Sacramento Delta area in Northern California. We like to describe what this means, the fact that they quitclaimed the these leases back to the State Lands Commission and then subsequently filed for bankruptcy in this kind of analogy. You own a home and you rent out the home to a tenant, and the tenant in the middle of the night leaves and leaves all their stuff in the home. And as the owner of that home, you are responsible for then getting rid of those facilities and getting rid of that stuff that was left in the home. That's a situation that the State Lands Commission is in at this point in time. Veneco has left all of their facilities on the state's land, and we are in the process of working to get rid of those facilities. And of course, we'll get into the details of that because that's why you're all here. I do want to make the point that this, based on California law, the fact that Veneco has quitclaimed those leases back to the state, those leases are effective upon receipt by the State Lands Commission. The State Lands Commission does not need to formally accept those quitclaim leases. They are effective upon the receipt. And those that area, it goes back into the Coastal Sanctuary, and under the Coastal Sanctuary Act, the State Lands Commission is prohibited from issuing any new leases covering that area. So are no plans by the State Lands Commission to pursue any new leases for that area, both policy-wise and because we don't have the legal authority to do so. Of course, the law can always be changed, but that will take an act of the legislature and the California governor. So next slide, please. So the facilities that we're dealing with offshore. For those that don't know the jurisdiction of the State Lands Commission, we own the land waterward or seaward of the mean high tide line. And so the leases that you see there are, and the facilities located on them are the ones that we have jurisdiction over, and those are the ones that were quitclaim back to us. So you can obviously see the Piers 421 lease, and then the two leases associated with Platform Holly, along with the other structures that are an infrastructure that's located on our lands that we will be dealing with. I did fail to mention the Elwood Pier. That's under a separate lease with the State Lands Commission. That was not quitclaim back to us, so that lease will also go through the bankruptcy proceedings. However, that was a lease that is also shared by Exxon, and so we're working through some of the nuances associated with that. Next slide, please. You all know what Platform Holly looks like. So as you know, Platform Holly was constructed and put into operation in 1964. The original lessee was ARCO. In 1993, ExxonMobil Mobil acquired both leases from ARCO. And then in 1997, those leases were acquired by Venoco. And that included not just Platform Holly, but Piers 421, along with the Elwood Marine Terminal and the EOF. Next slide, please. So just a little bit of history on Platform Holly and especially the infrastructure that's associated with it. And because this is televised and this PowerPoint will go on our website, we just wanted to include some of those statistics. Next slide, please. And you are all probably really familiar with Piers 421, the two shore zone piers that include a well on each of those. So in total, we're looking at 32 wells, 30 on Platform Holly and two on Piers 421 that we will be responsible for decommissioning, plugging and abandoning and decommissioning. Next slide, please. Again, just a little bit more history on the Piers 421. As you can tell, both Piers 421 and Platform Holly go back decades. And that is important because as we start moving through some of the legal avenues, both in bankruptcy and identifying past operators and their respective responsibilities, we're looking at all the various contracts and assignments associated with those transfers to determine the extent of responsibility and liability. Next slide, please. So the State Lands Commission's first priority as it relates to the decommissioning process and the ultimate disposition of the platform and the piers is to protect public health and safety and the marine environment. That is our number one priority, and that is what's driving every decision that the commission makes on this. When looking at the entire decommissioning process and looking at where we've started and where we plan to end, we look at this in three phases. As of tonight, we are currently in phase one. Upon receipt of those quitclaim deeds, the agreement that we had with Venoco to keep their personnel on the platform and also the maintaining the piers and also maintaining the EOF went into effect. That agreement, we call it a temporary services agreement. It was basically to keep Venoco staff on the premises, on the facilities, to ensure that those facilities were secure and we could protect public health and safety. That agreement had an initial term expiring at the end of June. We have recently extended that to expire at the end of July. Phase one also includes the State Lands Commission seeking a qualified contractor to come in and essentially take the place of Venico for the purposes of securing the facilities and pursuing the plugging and abandonment process. The RFP went out for a bid a couple of weeks ago that we are planning to receive responses to that RFP on June 19th, I believe. And shortly thereafter, we will start reviewing and interviewing the bidders and with the goal of picking one in short order so that we can get that contractor on the facilities while we still have Venico personnel on the facilities to ensure a smooth transition. Once we have a contractor selected and on board, we'll move into phase two. And this is, I think, in my opinion, the most important part of this whole entire effort. This is the plugging and abandoning of the 32 wells. This is what's going to make all the facilities safe. Once we select the contractor, we will move very quickly to get them set up, work with them to develop a plugging and abandonment plan, work with our partners at our various state and local agencies to ensure that we have all the correct permits in place to start performing that work. We think that'll take about 20 to 36 months, depending on the conditions. And once that's complete, Platform Holly and Pierce 421 will be rendered largely safe. And so that is what we're keeping our eye on the ball at this point. I know that there's a lot of interest in what happens to these facilities after the plugging and abandonment phase, and it's a very important issue for the local community and the state. That is what we consider phase three, and that includes the final decommissioning and removal of the facilities. We have not focused on any of those details on what the options are, because again, our focus is on plugging and abandoning and making the facility safe. But we are also looking ahead to figure out when do we start planning for that phase. And we think that once we begin the P&A process and we have a P&A plan in place, we can start thinking ahead and looking at, okay, what is a decommissioning plan going to look like, and how are we going to structure the CEQA process to help inform that decision. So we think it'll take approximately 18 months from the start of plugging and abandonment until we start working on a decommissioning plan, and including starting the CEQA process, which will be an environmental impact report. So that's from a 20,000 foot level. That's how we see the decommissioning process unfolding. This is an incredibly complex set of infrastructure and facilities. These are incredibly deep wells. The plugging and abandonment process, we anticipate to be a complex effort. It's also an effort that's highly dependent on funding, as you can imagine. We have a $22 million bond with Venico that we have called on with the surety company. We are in the process of working with the surety company to be paid out on that bond. We are also an active participant in the bankruptcy proceedings in Delaware through our Attorney General's office. And are submitting claims against the Venico estate to cover the remaining costs of the plugging and abandonment and the decommissioning. We are also looking at past operators and the extent of their responsibility and liability. So as I mentioned before, all of that is really dictated on the contracts that were involved and the various assignments and the responsibilities that remained with the prior operators to cover the plugging and abandonment and decommissioning of the facilities in an event like this. And finally, we have been successful in receiving some emergency funding from the state to help start the plugging and abandonment process while we are working with the surety company to get that initial $22 million. And we will continue to keep the legislature and the administration informed on our progress to ensure that we have the best chance we can to get additional funding to continue this process. Next slide, please. So we are, I have to say, I have to give a plug for our team led by Seth and Jeff. We are incredibly accessible. These are our direct lines, and to Seth and Jeff, along with our external affairs chief, if you have any questions, you can contact us at any time, and they are incredibly responsive to all requests. I would also encourage everyone to go to our website, which is in the top right corner of that slide. We have a whole web page dedicated to the Venico facility decommissioning, including copies of all the lease agreements and the assignment agreements, along with staff reports, along with copies of our temporary services agreement with Venico, fact sheets, press releases, along with links to Dogger and to other agencies. We are continually populating that web page with additional materials. Our goal is really to be as transparent as possible in this whole process. We have, I hope, the same objective and goal as the community and the region has as it relates to securing these facilities, making them safe, and the full decommissioning of these facilities in a timely and effective manner. With that, I wanted to really, that's the end of our presentation. So we wanted to turn it over to anyone that had questions or comments or concerns that we can either address here or follow up. I will, before we turn it over to questions, and I do have some speaker slips here, I want to just let you know, really in the spirit of transparency, that the State Lands Commission has not been in this situation before. We have not had a lessee of this magnitude abandon these types of facilities in the past before. But I am very confident in our team's ability and our commissioner's ability to make decisions and pursue this in a very efficient way that really keeps public health and safety and protection of the marine environment as really our objective throughout this entire process. So I say that because we may not have all the answers at the time you ask those questions, whether it's tonight or tomorrow or next month, but we will endeavor to find out those answers, and we will endeavor to keep you all informed of all the progress that we are making as we go through this effort. So with that, I will turn it over to questions. And I don't have any the speaker slips in any order, so I'll just go in with what I have. And if you want to pass, please just let me know, and we'll go on to the next one. The first speaker I have is Ginger Anderson.
Hi, good evening. Thanks for having this meeting. I'm Ginger Anderson. I'm with Stantec. And the question was essentially how does this decommissioning or how does this process with State Lands affect the onshore facility? It's not part of your lease as it's on land, right? Not the water, but all this activity associated, what does that do? And I saw on one of your slides the phase three would be the actual taking away of the facilities and infrastructure, and I'm assuming that's when the EOF would become, part of that?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it was good that you went first, because I'm sure that's on everyone's mind. technically, legally, the State Lands Commission does not have any jurisdiction over the Elwood Onshore Facility. We don't own the underlying land, and we don't regulate the facility. Obviously, it's an integral part of the operations out at Platform Holly and Pierce 421, which is why we included the continuing maintenance and operation of the EOF in our temporary services agreement with Venico. It is also why that is a part of our RFP for contractors that are bidding. We know that because of the hydrogen sulfide gas, that there are significant health and safety issues that also go towards, that are also connected with the EOF. While the State Lands Commission does not have official jurisdiction or authority or ownership over that land or facility, we are committed to working with the City of Goleta, with other interested regulatory entities to ensure that that is kept safe. And also, we will need to work with everyone, the city and the regulated entities, because that EOF facility is going to be an integral part of the plugging and abandonment process. We will need to be able to move any oil that is released through that plugging and abandonment process, and also treat the hydrogen sulfide gas. So that is why we included it in our RFP, and we intend to do what we can short of taking ownership of that facility. And we are also committed to working with the City of Goleta on the legal front to understand how that asset is going to be treated in the bankruptcy court. So that that is the bankruptcy proceedings and how the bankruptcy court and Venico are treating its assets and dealing with that is an evolving process as we speak. In fact, we were just talking with Ann earlier, and we learned some new stuff that we hadn't learned before. So it's an ongoing evolving process that we're well aware of, and we're going to do what we can given our limited jurisdiction. And I have to say, I feel like this is so formal. I'd rather be on the other side just talking about this. So forgive me if I'm a little off. Barbara Massey.
Good evening. I have a question regarding the hydrogen sulfide problem. Currently, the EOF has a variance allowing them to operate without the off-site hydrogen sulfide monitor, and it does not come due until October, but it can not start again. That's not good. You can't start the EOF again processing gas and oil, according to APCD, without it being in place. And I wondered, do you know there is such a problem? And, you know, is APCD keeping you up on it? Because I live not that far away, and we did have a scare not that long ago. It wasn't Venico's hydrogen sulfide, but nonetheless, we're well aware that that's a problem and hope that this is being considered.
Definitely. Yes, I appreciate you bringing that up, and that is a top priority of ours. In fact, we have started conversations with APCD with the goal of, once we get our contractor selected, to meet with them to go through all of those details to ensure that we're complying with the law as we move forward in this process, but most importantly, making sure that we're doing it in a safe manner. And I'm going to turn it over to Seth to expand on that.
And Barbara, that's our whole goal with contracting this out and bringing in certified operators. I think big picture on this is that we want any modicum of continued operation to operate within the bounds of the permitting, that everybody is kind of looking at this very clearly. I think the other part of this that is important for the purposes of what's going to happen during the plug and abandonment is it'll be one well at a time. This won't be like being back in production when Venico was producing in 2015 prior to the spill. So, you know, at that point in time, Vinica was around 3,600 barrels a day. This would be pressure relief on the wells so that the teams can get in and set the plugs and the cement and everything else that needs to be set inside the well so that those wells can be made safe. And I think the secondary kind of note to that is that while there would be some liquid and some gas released through these pressure relief operations as a part of the well abandonment, once those are abandoned, those wells won't leak gas, and that's actually happening right now. I mean, I think most people who are aware of this understand that those wells are technically, I mean, they're open, and they are leaking gas behind the casing, and it's collected inside of a sort of a collection line, and then it ultimately goes over to the Elwood Onshore Facility for treatment, which is good, but there isn't a functional alternative to the Elwood Onshore Facility. It's a necessary piece of equipment. So, you know, the long answer to this is, once the wells are completed, it'll be great because the Elwood Onshore Facility won't be processing hydrogen sulfide gas. That particular concern for the residences around here and the kind of local issues with H2S will be solved. Everything that would remain would be, basically in the reservoir. It would be contained. So I think that's an important part of this, is that there will be some ongoing fluids and gas during the plug and abandonment, but once it's done, Elwood Onshore won't have to worry about hydrogen sulfide gas from Holly anymore.
Hello this evening to the staff and to Ms. Lucici. I probably massacred that name, didn't I? Lucchesi. I got the Italian in there. Vic Cox is my name. We're my wife and I are residents across the 101, and we're one of those who were affected by the gas leak last October. So we're very concerned about what kind of plugging is going to be going on and how soon that'll happen. We get an idea from your presentation. Thank you. But I had another, even earlier question that bothered me a lot. When Vinica was trying to expand before the pipeline burst or leaked or whatever you want to call it, before the pipeline disaster, they were trying to expand their leases by realigning the boundaries that included two other leases that had been quit claimed, I understand, by ARCO years ago. So this is my question to you folks. What is the permanency of a quit claim, and how easy is it to change it? Thank you.
And we're happy to expand more. I want to try and be as concise as possible. There are two sets of statutes in law. One is the Coastal Sanctuary Act, and there is an exception to the commission's prohibition on issuing new offshore oil and gas leases. That exception does not, as far as we know, apply to this area. That exception is that the reservoir is being drained by a federal asset, and we aren't aware of that happening at all here. So the commission's ability to issue a new lease is completely prohibited at this location. Venico's lease line modification or adjustment application was applied under a different law that allows a lessee, an oil and gas lessee, to make a request of the commission to modify their lease boundary. In order to be able to do that, you need to have a current valid lease, and you also have to meet a number of other requirements. Because of the quit claim by Venico, that option is no longer available as well. And so the short answer to your question about what is the permanency of a quit claim, the State Lands Commission does not have the legal authority to release this area for offshore oil and gas. Now, the Coastal Sanctuary Act is an act of the legislature. The legislature can always change the law with the signature of the governor. So that would be the only avenue, as far as we can tell, of that changing. So I'll turn to my attorney to expand a little bit more. So I think the if you were to ask me what my opinion was, about the chances of that happening, slim to none.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think what Jennifer really hit on is the important part. In order for you to have, for a potential lessee under the state to have an opportunity to seek a lease boundary modification, you have to have an active lease. And the lease boundary modification, just for those who are interested, the statutory scheme for that is under Public Resources Code 6872.5. There's a variety of factors that were created and modified during the creation of the original Coastal Sanctuary Act. And then when it was modified in 1994, additional factors that had to occur were implemented and laid into that particular statutory scheme. And it is very limited. The ability for that opportunity is very limited. And it requires that you be sited over a reservoir in terms of your lease, but that you are not actually covering the most efficient extraction plan, because you can't go outside of the boundary of your lease, because the way that the boundaries were done historically were just sort of vertical lines from shore out to the 3 mile nautical limit, which is the extent of California's ownership. So that's what that particular provision was allowing for, is to recapture the productive zone, to make sure that if somebody does have a lease with the state of California to produce minerals and resources, that they do so efficiently. And that was the entirety of it. So like Jennifer said, when the leases were quick claimed, when Venico quick claimed PRC 3120 and 3242, the two leases that constituted their production field, there is no other option now. Once it's gone, it's gone. So you have to have a lease in place that sits over a field that is basically inefficiently placed, and then access a boundary adjustment. But like I said, it's a little more complicated than it's not, and it's not the traditional new lease. It does require that lease be in place in the first place. So once these are gone, they're gone for good. And there, as Jennifer said, the ability to release or to negotiate a new lease does not exist as a result of the 94 California Sanctuary.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Dr.
Ingeborg Cox.
I have a lot of questions,
but good.
I'm just going to give you the ones that I am at the moment ready to share. My name is Dr. Ingeborg Cox. I am a physician with training in emergency medicine, family practice, and also occupational and environmental medicine. And I represent the Citizens Advisory Committee, 3rd District, at the APCD. But right now I am speaking for myself. So in 1990, the UOF was rezoned as part of the South Coast oil and gas consolidation process to recreation. 1990. The UOF is the last remaining non-conforming oil and gas facility on the South Coast. After the problem they had with the hydrogen release at Holly, Santa Barbara County initiated studies into amortization ordinance in 1999, which would have required the abandonment of the EOF. Now, so that the public knows, hydrogen sulfide levels from Holly are cited above 10,000 parts per million. If you inhale 1,000 part per million, one breath, that is lethal. Also, the Elwood Marine Terminal should have been decommissioned and removed within 18 days of January the 1st, 2016. It appears that the EMT is still running around or is still there. So who is enforcing the things that are put in writing, but we still see them there? One question that I have, will Holly be manned 24 hours a day? And also, will the EOF be manned 24 hours a day? Also, does the SIMQAP, which stands for Safety Inspection, Maintenance, and Quality Assurance Program, will it still do its audits at the EOF? Because the fact that they are right now, quote unquote, not functioning, or they are just standing in there, something can happen. And so if you are interested in the protection of the public, somebody needs to be overseeing if there is a leak or something is corroding, and then you are going to have the consequences secondary to that. At the moment, this is all what I have to say. Thank you.
All right, I'll do my very best. In terms of the zoning and the non-conforming use, I think that is a question that should be directed to the city of Goleta. And I can turn to them if they want to talk about that now. I'm not sure to what extent that is a priority right now, because I think it will be depending on who ends up with the land and the facility at the end of the bankruptcy process. And so that'll be important, and I don't want to speak for the city, but I do know that the city is actively involved in the bankruptcy proceedings. So the EOF and the land underneath it is considered an asset as far as we know. It will be going through the bankruptcy proceeding. Now, there are some late-breaking news associated with that I can't get into right now, but because we're still trying to figure it out. But again, that the EOF and the land is going to be dealt with, as far as we know, through the bankruptcy proceeding. So whoever ends up with it will have to deal with the zoning issues and the non-conforming use.
Can I ask you a quick question?
Yeah, please.
How is the land more valuable? If it's zoned recreational, uh-huh, or if it's zoned for oil refinery?
If you're asking like an appraisal question on valuation, I can't really get into it. That's a very site-specific evaluation. And while we do have appraisers on staff, we have not actually conducted that kind of valuation on the value of that property. We had been following the amortization studies. So we do have some of that information, but it looks like Seth wants to answer some of that. So I'll let him.
Well, no, I was going to say that the evaluation of the underlying value of the asset will be done in bankruptcy. It's part of the bankruptcy court's asset sale. So when they go through the liquidation process, part of this is going to be looking at whether or not there are potential buyers or interested buyers in that property, whether it's NGOs or interested parties, philanthropists who might want to come in and take this over and restore this to an open space recreational, standard or other, and somebody who wants to hold on to it and, theoretically lobby the city for modifications in zoning. Obviously, it probably wouldn't be successful for things like heavy industrial use. But that said, that valuation will be done because in order to market the asset effectively, they're going to have to kind of make those valuations. And one of the biggest parts of that is you're really talking about an asset that still has a lot of liabilities associated with it because of the infrastructure that's on that site. So, as Jennifer said, speaking to the specific market value of this would be very difficult, but I think everybody's very familiar with that site. The location is phenomenal. Like I said, Vinico does own the underlying fee, so they own the actual land that this sits on. How this gets distributed out in the long term is a bigger question. And we're all sort of trying to figure out what steps are going to be taken relative to the bankruptcy court. So I think us trying to put a dollar amount on it would be problematic and wouldn't really achieve the desired result, which is, somebody may buy this out at a price that's unrealistic just because they want to remediate it. And I think it could be, again, could be a local NGO group that gets funding from a large number of you who want to see this turn into like a local park. You could have, like I said, different philanthropists who could step in and do this. And I think, as Jennifer said, we have watched very closely the amortization studies, the original amortization studies, the study that the city recently did as a part of its termination ordinance. We've watched all of that kind of build out, and we've been participatory in it. And I think our goal relative to what happens with the Elwood Onshore facility at this point is to facilitate the city of Goleta as much as we possibly can and make sure that we get Platform Holly abandoned and safe so that the EOF isn't a continuing risk or a continuing negative problem for the community. That's our first step. subsequent decommissioning issues are a question mark. As Jennifer put up, I mean, we have question marks right now for anything past $22 million. And I think it's worth just putting out for everyone, you know, estimates that we've looked at for plug and abandonment for the phase two that we were talking about earlier are as high as $75 million. So we're talking about a shortfall for the state of California of over $50 million. If you include decommissioning all the infrastructure that's offshore, that number climbs up over $120 million. So we're talking about a $100 million shortfall. So we're not prepared to get into a lot of the finite issues, and we don't have a final number for actual decommissioning of all the associated infrastructure. Mm-hmm. But we're talking about a huge amount of money here. And a lot of that comes down not because of the cost of the infrastructure, but it's because of the question, Dr. Cox, that you asked about staffing. We are going to be making sure that Vinico's assets, the EOF and Platform Holly, are staffed 24 hours a day. So in addition to the plug and abandonment operations, there will be, as part of the subcontract on this request for proposal, there will be staffing at all times. So that's the same sort of staffing that's out there now. This would be for calls for spills, emergencies, or anything else. It would be an independent cost, and it's expensive. Because in order to staff the assets with knowledgeable and experienced personnel who are certified, EOF is a little bit of a specialty, especially when you get into, like you were saying before, the concentrations of the H2S levels. You need people who are very, very capable and understand what they're working with, otherwise it can become very dangerous. So when we look at this as a total and we put it all together, a lot of what the state is estimating on expenses are the 24-hour staffing. It's maintaining mechanics, you know, electrical engineers. It's maintaining supply boat crews, supply boats and crew boats, so that we can transition people on and off. I mean, there's a lot of logistical issues that go into this. But when I say the cost is significant, I wanted to put the number out there so everyone understands. We don't have $100 million in our lap. We will be making claims in the bankruptcy court, like everyone else, against Vinico for the difference from what we have access to under the bond and what we may actually need. But a lot of this just depends. And we may get out into the middle of the and I don't want to sour this, but we may get out into the middle of the plug and abandonment work and realize it's going to cost 20 or 30 or 40% more because, you know, there's problems downhole. So, you know, we're prepared for the realities, but until we're actually out doing a lot of this and we're into the process, right now it's our best estimate. And I think that's about what we can give you for that. And like I said, just keep in mind that we're very actively searching for what we can do to find funding, whether it's initially funding in an emergency sense from the state or it's prior operators or whatever else. We're kind of looking at all pathways. And again, we are a creditor in the Vinico bankruptcy. I think everybody should understand what that means. First of all, we are not a secured creditor, which makes things different. So legally speaking, secured creditors and administrative claims get priority on any money that comes out of the estate. So whatever Vinico sells of its other assets, like its federal platforms, that money goes in to pay their secured creditors first. We will get something, but it won't be any fraction of $100 million unless something strange were to happen, right? So again, as creditors in this action, the state stands to make some money, but or get some money back, but we don't know what that is. It could be, you know, 1 cent on the dollar. So, you know, we're talking about some very real issues here in terms of money. And, you know, we'll continue to pursue that path, but that's our biggest question mark right now as well. But, you know, we have talked, and Jennifer has led the charge up the administration to the governor and also within our own commission. And she's led this charge to make sure that we are preparing for these paths where the state of California does use some emergency funding, and we'll figure out the rest later. We got to get safe. We got to get through phase two. Once that's done, we'll worry more about the money. But let's get to the safe point so we don't have, as Dr. Cox said, any lethal accidents with hydrogen sulfide, so that we don't have even a small spill. I mean, you know, the plane's cleanup was $100 million, over 500 barrels, so or 600 barrels. And I think, you know, that's an important reality for thinking about what these costs can be when you have a spill in the marine environment. So we certainly don't need to tack on any of those problems on top of our existing. So we want to take this slowly, and we want to do it right, and we want to do it right one time to the extent possible, and, you know, try and control those costs. But I think big picture, kind of level setting, maybe some questions that folks have, that's what we're looking at. It's a pretty steep order.
So I think we responded to your question on, you know, the ultimate disposition of the Elwood onshore facility and the underlying land. we answered the manning or the staffing of the facilities, including the EOF. So we are committed to ensuring that we have staff out there, contractors out there 24/7 to ensure the safety. And I think your last question had to do with the Elwood Marine Terminal and what the status of that is, especially because the terminal was supposed to be removed at a certain time and date. So I'm going to turn it back over to Seth to talk about what actually has been removed and what still remains, and also that that lease is currently in the bankruptcy proceeding.
So the Elwood Onshore, the Elwood Marine Terminal at UCSB, all of the onshore infrastructure still remains. Some of the anchor points offshore have been dealt with, but the primary pipe still remains to be removed. I think for those of you who don't know, the County of Santa Barbara was working on the CEQA treatment on this, on the EIR, but with the bankruptcy, Vinicos ceased activity on ongoing work. So the Elwood Marine Terminal is a question. It's a big question mark. It is something that, that the City of Goleta and UC Santa Barbara have involved themselves in the bankruptcy court. So the final answer on this is we don't know. It'll depend on what the bankruptcy court does with this. Vinico is seeking to reject those contracts because it's a negative impact to the estate, and that's bankruptcy court's not really about equity, and it's more about dollars and cents. So it tends to be more of a function of just how the balance ledger works out. And so if Vinico can make a compelling argument to the court that this ongoing obligation is just a monetary remedy anyway, then the court can offset it. I mean, there's arguments for why this is a, you know, more of an environmental risk or should be treated as a you know, both pre-petition and post-petition issue, or you know, administrative claims for environmental threats, but the we're not sure where the court's going to go with that. So Elwood Marine Terminal, there is a an EIR that the Santa Barbara Energy Division is working on and has been the lead on, and they were moving forward on that when Vinico said stop, and we're not paying for it.
One quick question.
Yeah.
Vinico has other assets, so you cannot touch those assets?
That's
well, that's part of the bankruptcy proceeding, so we're going to try.
Well, so just so everyone knows, the first thing that happens in bankruptcy is a federal stay. It's a stay of action. So the idea behind that is to try and give a bankrupt entity an opportunity to get their kind of collective house in order. In this particular case, obviously, Vinico is looking to liquidate and pay off existing creditors. So there's not like a lien that can be attached at this point. We actually can't really take any actions directly. And that's one of the limitations. Beverly Hills is dealing with some issues with Vinico because there's some wells that are within the Beverly Hills High School and within the district. UC Santa Barbara is dealing with this. City of Goleta is dealing with this. We all are. And it's sort of a, it's not hat in hand, but you know, you go in and you go to the court and you say, here's what we believe these damages are. And you know, we would like some degree of restitution, but that's, it isn't like you have an entity in good standing who does something wrong and you can attach against existing production. So we're limited on what can happen based on bankruptcy law. It's a very specialized and kind of very specialized law that has very particular bookends on it. So, you know, we're involved, and I think that's, as this proceeds more, we'll let you know more. And for those interested, just as a real quick aside, on our website, I will post as a direct link what's called Prime Clerk. If, for those of you who are interested and want to follow the regular docket for the bankruptcy court, that'll be up there. You can click on it. It'll take you directly there. If you want, you can use your personal emails and set alerts so it will tell you when things are happening within the bankruptcy. And, you know, a lot of this is just kind of learning by following. You can kind of see what's happening. You can see judges' orders. You can see motions by the respective parties that are part of this. So if you have an interest, it can be sometimes a little bit of a trudge, but if you have an interest in sort of following the bankruptcy activity, that will be accessible through our website. And then jumping down to the very last question that Dr. Cox asked about the SimQuap. Mm. The SimQuap is still very much in place. Ann and I had, Adam Wells, the Director for City Planning, have been talking about going out and continuing the audits. Part of the agreement that we negotiated with Vinico was to maintain existing operations. Everything still has to be complied with. All of your permit requirements, everything else, all of your safety scheduling, all has to be continued because we weren't sure of everything that was going on, and so our expectation was that they would maintain that, and that is an obligation that Vinico still carries under that agreement. And in coordination with Ann Wells and the city of Goleta, we anticipate doing this hopefully very soon. It's just a scheduling issue. So
I will just add that we have staff inspectors that are out on the platform and at the piers and at the EOF on a regular basis, on a weekly basis. So, all right, next is Dan. Pagenkoff, or
Dano?
He
just was here.
Okay. We'll come back. Bob Evans and Susan Chess.
Good evening. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to be here tonight. I'm here tonight to speaking on behalf of the marine life that's below Platform Holly. I started taking underwater pictures in 1966, came to Santa Barbara to attend Brooks Institute, where I received an honorary master's in photography. And having a boat in Santa Barbara Harbor, I logged over 2,000 dives at the Channel Islands, photographing marine life that exists out here in the channel. Being the platforms were rather close to the harbor, I started diving on Platform Hilda, that's no longer off of Summerland, and became involved in the first study with Scripps Institute, Department of Fish and Game, and the American Petroleum Institute to document the marine life on the platform, because there's a tremendous community that is below the surface that we do not see. I logged over 850 dives on these offshore platforms and had a 7-year contract. All of the work that I did on the platforms, almost 98% of it came out of my own pocket. So I wasn't really being funded by the oil industry. I was taking this on my own behalf because I was interested in the life that forms on shipwrecks and stuff that gets tossed into the ocean. Platform Holly was where I made my deepest dive, 211 feet, to photograph the Picacho rockfish that Dr. Milton Love at UCSB had been studying with the submarines and going down there. And we actually went down to the bottom, 3-minute bottom time, to photograph the fish there. I was also very fortunate to have the first double-page spread in National Geographic magazine of the first abalone habitat to be put down underneath the platform. So what we were looking at, we were looking beyond the oil aspect of the platform. We were looking at what we could actually turn these into for the future. And our company, excuse me, 2-page spread, our company, the Mussel Company, spent 5 years with the Department of Health and Fish and Game so that we could harvest mussels off the platforms for human consumption. And we had a $22,000 federal grant, which we matched. And this is a very expensive can of mussels. I don't think we'd want to have it tonight. But so I would like to see the marine life stay on the jacket. I think the bottom, I've been down to the bottom, there's some junk down there that should be cleaned up, and cut the platform off, and maybe work with UCSB, put some cameras on it, turn it into something that could be beneficial, because I just got back from Houston. They will not be putting platforms in the ocean like this. This is 60s technology. Everything is done subsea where you don't see it anymore. So thank you very much for your time.
We hope you'll be an active participant in our CEQA process when we get to that part.
I'm going to tie myself to that platform. It's not going to go away.
Susan Chess, did you?
No.
Okay.
I just, you wanted my name a lot.
Okay, sounds good. All right. George Steinbed?
Hello. My name is George Steinbach, and I represent Steinbach. I represent the California Artificial Reef Enhancement Program, which shortened to CARE. I want to first wish you lots of luck on a very complex and, I think, delicate project. I hope you get through it safely without incident.
Thank you. I think
it's going to be a big challenge for you. But my interest, I'd like to piggyback on Bob a little bit and talk about the marine life on the structure and around the structure. We went through this with the 4-H platforms in the mid-1990s, where four platforms in state waters were removed with a mitigated negative declaration. At that time, they identified two adverse impacts to that project. One was the mortality to fish life due to the removal processes of the structure, and secondly, the loss of the marine animals and marine habitat attached to the legs of the structure when it was removed to removed from the water and taken to shore. They, of course, died. At that time, there was a lot of people that felt that that project shouldn't have been executed in the way it was, that it killed an awful lot of valuable marine life. But it was hard to make that point because all we had was Bob's pictures and reports from fishermen and divers about what the habitat looked like. But today, that's changed. Since the 4-H project, there's been an extensive period of sustained scientific inquiry, I guess if you call it, on those structures. And we know a lot more about them today than we ever did during the 4-H project. I don't think it's necessary to go into that in a great deal of detail, but in addition to the two adverse impacts I mentioned, we now know there's a big third one, and that is the fact that these platforms are highly prolific fish nurseries for very important fish species in Southern California, and that the loss of these structures will adversely affect our marine fisheries, which are in pretty tough shape as they stand today. So I'd like for to have some assurance that you guys understand this issue, that you are aware of the scientific research that's been done, and that the evaluation of this removal project will take that into consideration. Mm-hmm.
So thank you for that. Yes, we are aware of some of the new science that's coming out. We participate on a decommissioning working group with various federal and state agencies looking at what decommissioning and removal of these platforms and the potential reuse of them may look like in the future. I really, at this time, we are our sole focus is on the plugging and abandonment. But with that said, it is on our radar in terms of what's going to happen to these facilities and how we're going to conduct that analysis on both environmentally from a land use perspective and a policy perspective in terms of what's the ultimate disposition of those facilities. That process isn't going to start until we get through a major part of the plugging and abandonment. But I want to assure everybody that that decision will not be made in a vacuum. And there's a couple of ways I can assure you of that. One is the State Lands Commission is subject to the California Environmental Quality Act. We will be conducting an EIR to assess what the disposition of those facilities, including the platform, will look like. And so under CEQA, we will have to look at a proposed project along with various alternatives. And all of those will have to be analyzed to some extent from an environmental impact perspective. And I'm sure everybody is aware of kind of that CEQA process. It's really a information and analysis effort and a public participation effort in terms of gathering all the relevant information in order for the decision makers to make an informed decision at the end of the day. So that is one very large, very, consistent public-oriented process that we will be pursuing in terms of the ultimate disposition of the platforms. The second part of that is that the State Lands Commission makes all of its decisions at a public meeting, not unlike the Board of Supervisors meeting or the City Council meetings that you guys may be more familiar with. We agendize those decisions. There's a staff report and analysis that goes with that. And the commission holds a public meeting very similar to this where they can receive information in order to inform their decision. So that will also be part of that process. And I wouldn't be surprised if we have multiple hearings on what ends up, what the ultimate disposition of these facilities will be. So I can commit to you that we will comply with CEQA to its fullest, including all of the public engagement requirements and then some. And then our commission will also considering this issue to the fullest extent possible through public meetings and public engagement. We just, at this point, in terms of really kind of getting our hands dirty in terms of analyzing what's going to happen with these facilities, we just aren't there yet because we need to make these facilities safe first. But we definitely know that's on the horizon.
Can I have a follow-up?
Yes, and I've been told that I need to encourage you to come up to the mic because we are being televised, and this way everyone can hear you.
Okay, just a follow-up. There's one aspect of this third phase three mm-hmm. project, which kind of bleeds into phase one, I believe, which is your well abandonment program. Mm. A part of a complete well abandonment, it not only is the subsurface abandonment, but also the casing or the conductor removal. And in a project which could evolve into something other than a complete removal, a removal of the conductors at this early stage would negate some of the benefits of retaining it in the future, if you know what I mean.
I see.
So I think that from our viewpoint, there perhaps you should give consideration to indeed abandoning the wells and make it safe, but deferring the conductor removal until such time as you make a decision about which actual structure abandonment alternative you're going to use.
I appreciate that. Go ahead and answer.
Sorry, the conductors wouldn't be coming out until we abandon the entire platform. They're not going to be pulled at this time.
All right. Dano Pagankoff?
Good evening. My name is Dano Pagankoff. I'm a U.S. Navy veteran, former commercial diver, and currently I'm a chemical engineer. I work out at UCSB. This is a very important topic for people in Goleta, and it's very sobering, $120 million. Oh, my gosh. I'm a phase three guy, and being an engineer, I usually don't see problems. I see solutions. I think phase three does tie into phase one. We're going to lose a lot of revenue from Venico with this getting wrapped up. So is there a way that we could make some money off of this project in phase three? That's what I'd like to talk about. Something that's environmentally friendly. They do some things down in San Diego where they have aqua farms. We've pulled mussels and oysters or scallops off of some of the other platforms. I've had the unique experience of being on Platform Holly. I've dove down on her twice. It's beautiful. It's amazing. You wouldn't believe the things that you see down there. My solution, I think that we have a possibility of making, you know, we love this artificial reef. It's amazing. We have some of the foremost experts in the world, you know, Dr. Love and the rockfish and everything that's going on there. You should listen to these people. We could make this into a dive park. We could maybe strip a few levels off the top of it and then look at some of the other problems we have, the erosion over at Goleta Beach. Maybe some of that could be backfilled into there, help with some of that, grow some kelp in that area. Another important thing that hasn't been talked about is the seeps. You know, this is the second largest seep in the world that's going on out here. There's a lot of methane that's released into the atmosphere, okay? Those tents, I hope that we can do something to continue capturing that methane. Don't let it go released in the air. methane's 20 times more powerful as a greenhouse gas in the atmosphere. You know, there's a lot going on out there. There's Naples Reef. There's the marine protected area. We have a real potential to create a huge generator of revenue. I mean, maybe not like Scripps Institute of Oceanography, but UCSB has a marine science department. We've got the NOAA building out there. There's a lot of things going on. This could be incredible, you know? So I think we need to think real careful about this. And I want to develop a world-class dive park, maybe a lobster habitat. You know, let's get more rockfish, more lobster. People come into Goleta and, have seafood dinners. And Santa Barbara tourism is huge. How about Goleta? So, thanks.
I'm going to focus kind of in the reverse on the seep tents because I think it's important for everyone to understand. The seep tents that sit out over the existing seeps are no longer have containment. Those have been corroded and eroded significantly. So the long-term expectation that the seep tents would have any value for methane capture or anything else is just not, don't expect it. That's not going to happen. We're not sure what the final removal of the seep tents is going to look like. If necessary, it sort of depends on what the evaluation looks like and the costs and how this is all going to work out. But I do think that it's important to kind of mention that the seep tents aren't functional. And there are a lot of people here who can speak to that. But we don't have to get super deep into the weeds on it. I mean, I think just, you know, it's not something that's going to be rehabilitated in any real functional way. That said, the seeps in this area, as you mentioned, are quite big. They haven't been active in some time. You know, what happens for the future? If there's any kind of connectivity, that's a question. But we don't have any, you know, firm data for what could happen, you know, 10, 15, 20 years from now, if these seeps are surface outcrops of a deeper reservoir, and whether or not they're actually going to see an increase in seep activity as a result of lack of overall production, we don't know. There's a lot of questions there. There's definitely some data that has been presented for those of you who saw the draft environmental impact report for the South Elwood Field Project. Vinico had looked at some length the potential connectivity between the seeps and production. Ocean Science Trust had looked at that and said basically that the science was good, assuming that the underlying assumptions were right. And you know, that's a big question. And so the all told on this, in a traditional sort of pancake stack geologic structure, normally the seeps are very shallow, and there's no real relationship to the deep, deep reservoirs. Some of the stuff outside of the Santa Barbara Channel is a little different because it doesn't stack like a pancake. It's the pancake stack turned up. So these outcrops for some of the things could have relationships with deeper reservoirs. But again, you know, pinpointing that is very difficult. The science may say that the possibility exists, but really tying it to a functional production is hard to say. So I want to put that out there. We don't know what's going to happen with the future seep activity, whether it will increase, whether it's plateaued and will stay the same. That's entirely possible as well. It's one of those things where we'll sort of have to see what happens. There are groups that I know, including at UC Santa Barbara, that are wanting to do some baseline studies right now to look and see since refugio occurred in May of 2015, whether or not seep activity has modified in any, you know, significant way, increased, decreased, stayed the same. I don't know those results. There's things that people are looking into. It hasn't been, finalized or anything else. So a lot of questions about the seeps.
And the only thing I would just add in terms of looking at the potential for what could happen post-plugging and abandonment out there, including what's going to happen with the now corroded seep tents and other infrastructure. Again, that's going to be dealt with in the first instance during our EIR process. And one of the first steps in that is us sending out to the world a notice of preparation, where that's the first instance where the you or other members of the public can let us know what kinds of things should we be looking at in terms of future uses. Full removal, partial removal, and potential other uses for those facilities. So I really encourage you to try to keep track of our progress on this through all the different ways that we're going to be keeping the public knowledgeable of, about our efforts so that when the time comes for you to give us ideas about what we should be studying and considering, we can take that opportunity to do that because, you know, we need your help in terms of how we build out that environmental analysis and in terms of what does the public want to see in terms of what should be considered. So please, please keep track of what we're doing, and we'll do our very best to keep you updated as well. Bill Thoman. Hi.
Thank you very much. Hello, Executive Officer Lucchesi.
Yes.
My name is Bill Thoman, and I'm the president of Protean Energy. This is an Australian firm that makes a small wave energy device that makes electricity, or potentially could run a water pump to run a reverse osmosis water desalination process. Prior in my career, I headed up Pacific Gas and Electric's wave energy program called the Wave Connect program. There's still quite a bit of information up on the PG&E website about Wave Connect. We were working with the State Lands Commission a few years ago on siting two wave projects, one off of Humboldt Bay and one off of northern Santa Barbara County off of Vandenberg Air Force Base. Both of them were in state waters and subject to the jurisdiction of the State Lands Commission. PG&E moved on from more of the R&D type of energy programs to more conventional electricity and gas supply after the San Bruno pipeline explosion in 2010. I continued on with people that were very interested in establishing a marine renewable energy business and industry here in the state. We put a team together, won a $2.25 million grant from the U.S. Department of Energy through Cal Poly University at San Luis Obispo to do a feasibility study of siting a wave energy test center off of Vandenberg Air Force Base. We're just now winding up that study, filing the final report to DOE in a couple of weeks. It strikes me that the opportunity here at Platform Holly is one that could potentially, while plans are being made for the decommissioning of the project, and I understand there's a priority of activities in plugging the wells and considering the other alternatives here, but it seems like it's possible to have a temporary deployment of wave energy devices at Platform Holly for the important reason that, as you are aware, there's a submarine power cable that connects Holly with the shore grid that is actually fairly substantial, 3 megawatts in capacity. That was not too long ago replaced. I think in 2013 it was replaced, and so it's almost a new cable, as we like to think of these things. That could convey electricity generated beside Platform Holly to shore, to the Edison grid, and to potentially customers of renewable energy in the Santa Barbara area. I'm just here to say that it seems feasible to me. I'd love to find out how to become a part of the decommissioning thought process. I don't believe that this temporary deployment could hold up anything that you're planning to do for the disposition of Platform Holly. So, disappointing information.
So our last speaker is Linda Kropp. Unless anybody else, I don't want this to mean that we can't have any more questions or speakers. We have the room until 9 o'clock, so, and we're here, so. That doesn't mean you can talk till nine.
Cool. Get comfortable. Thank you and good evening. I'm Linda Kropp, Chief Counsel of the Environmental Defense Center, appearing on behalf of the Sierra Club Los Padres Chapter Get Oil Out and Citizens Planning Association. First of all, I would like to thank the State Lands Commission and Executive Officer Jennifer Lucchesi for hosting this town hall meeting, to all the other agencies that are here tonight. as you can see, the community has tremendous interest in this topic and a lot of questions, and I greatly appreciate the transparency. I've been on the website. It's amazing. I highly recommend that people utilize that resource, and it's great to know that there's going to be even more information available. So that's very refreshing, and it'll help the community monitor this process. Before I get to some specific questions, I want to put this issue in context. Since the 1969 Santa Barbara oil spill, the state of California has not issued a new lease. In fact, in 1994, the state passed the California Coastal Sanctuary Act. That was our state assembly member at the time, Jack O'Connell, which prohibits new leasing in state waters. And since then, not only have no new leases been issued, but 19 now have actually been quitclaimed. So our coast is much better protected. Similarly, the County of Santa Barbara has taken action to protect our coast. As was mentioned previously, in 1990, the county adopted a consolidation policy to protect our coast from a proliferation of oil and gas infrastructure along our coast. And as part of that process, the county rezoned and redesignated the Elwha Onshore facility from industrial use to recreation in 1996. The residents of the county confirmed that designation, which would require voter approval to change it. When Goleta became incorporated, the city adopted the county's policies, as well as the designation and zoning for the EOF, as well as Measure A. And on top of that, the city adopted some general plan policies that went even further, opposing new or expanded offshore oil and gas development and encouraging the termination of the EOF. So with this as the backdrop, I know we've heard a lot of sobering information today. I know it's going to be a ton of work, but for the community, I think we also have, I don't know if celebration is the right word, but something to look forward to. You know, to not see Platform Holly anymore, to not have the risks of the EOF anymore, to not see the oil tanks at Devereaux anymore. This is part of what, you know, our community can look forward to. So we thank the agencies that will be responsible for this process, and we're here to support you. So now I do have some specific questions and comments. First of all, with respect to Platform Holly and the piers, we are thankful that they will be, the oil wells will be plugged immediately, and had a couple questions on the timing. One was, we had previously been told it would take about 18 to 24 months. Now I see it's 20 to 36 months. Also heard that maybe one reason is these are plugged one at a time. So wondering, first of all, why the change in the time estimate, and then is it possible to plug more than one well at a time?
Hey, Linda, thank you. So the question on the time frame, you know, best case scenario, best case estimate is it was 18 months. We think that with some pre-planning that has to go into some of the more complex wells, which we're going to start with first, there's not a... We want to focus on the most difficult and get those out of the way. So we figure that we figured in a few extra months for pre-planning on the best case scenario. As we continue to find more information, we've come to understand that a few of the wells out on Platform Holly are quite complex. They're going to require a significant amount of work between us and also Dogger to make sure that they meet the appropriate standards for abandonment. These aren't going to be, these are not cookie cutter wells. To say at the least, these are almost like each well is custom. So each plan has to be developed per well. Mm-hmm. So some of that is kind of embedded in what the extension is. We added the extra time for the full upper end scale to 36 months because we are trying to be honest with what funding possibilities look like and any potential delays. I think that once the plug and abandonment work gets started, it will move at a fairly decent clip, but that, you know, this is all subject to ongoing information as we get into the process. And as I mentioned before, you know, with costs, we have an estimate right now based on what we know. We don't have any idea what we don't know yet. We'll find that out as those wells get open and we continue to do the work on them. So again, we've built in some time for expectations. I think, you know, some of our early estimates from engineering groups that we were looking at were the 18 to 24 month range. I still hope that that ends up being the appropriate range, but we want to prepare people for the possibility that it could take longer, whether a funding issue or complexity issue. That is a real possibility. So that's that part of it. And I think that the other question about multiple abandonments or plug and abandonment opportunities, I'm going to kick over to Jeff Plank for a second to talk about.
Yeah, while that would be wonderful, Holly doesn't have a whole lot of room, and there's just no way we could put any more than that one rig out there. Plus, the rig that's out there was specifically designed for that platform and for those wells. The wells are, just to give you an example, around 5 foot centers. Everything's very close knit out there, and the potential for even if we could put another rig out there, we would rather take our time and make sure we get everyone done right. And having two rigs and two crews just is not feasible out on the platform.
Thank you. Also with respect to Platform Holly and the piers, we do urge the state to pursue funding from the prior owners as well. I've seen those documents, and it seems like there's a deep pocket there, probably deeper than the bankruptcy. My final comment.
I would just add, we are sufficiently encouraged.
Thank you. And thanks for the foresight. Finally, with respect to Holly and the piers, our clients do want to see everything removed completely. We are still dealing with these toxic debris mounds offshore Summerlin more than 20 years after the platforms were partially, mostly removed. But we've got these, as you know, we've got these just huge debris mounds that are 20, 30 feet high, 200, 300 feet in diameter. There's no fish there. There's a bunch of toxic stuff in there, and we still don't have them cleaned up. And so we want everything removed. We want the marine environment restored. We don't want a bunch of junk left in the ocean because people can't see it. We're also very concerned about the safety and liability issues. And Holly is just close enough to shore that it's just an accident waiting to happen if it's not fully removed. With respect to the marine terminal, those are more comments than questions. With respect to the marine terminal, we would like to know more about how the state, the university, and the county will share responsibility for the decommissioning and restoration of this site. And this is really important to us. Again, it's overdue. We've been waiting a long time, but it's in a prime ecological setting. It's right next to a university natural reserve, the Devereaux Slough, one of the most prolific Audubon birding sites, Elwood Mesa, snowy plover habitat, beaches, dune habitat, and now the UCSB's North Campus Restoration Area. So we want to see this cleaned up as soon as possible. And then with respect to the EOF, we certainly support the city as it moves forward. And we also urge the city to pursue any funding options, and maybe the state has some ideas for that. So I think in closing, we understood that other agencies were going to be here and be available. So to the extent it's not within the State Lands Commission's purview, I have heard a couple questions tonight that I would like to hear from the other agencies. For example, would like to hear from APCD about the question about the variance and the monitoring. Love to hear from Goleta about the EOF, and love to hear from, I guess, the county primarily about the Elwood Marine Terminal and some of the pipelines that are in the county's jurisdiction. And thank you again for holding this hearing.
So we're happy to share the stage up here, our county, city, and APCD friends. I'll leave it up to them. I'm trying to identify someone to come up and talk a little bit. Thank you.
Hello. My name is Caitlin McNally, and I'm the Compliance Division Manager at the Air Pollution Control District. And to address the question about the variance that has been approved for the off-site monitoring station for the Elwood Offshore Facility for Venico. So that was recently most recently approved in October of 2016 for a one-year period, and will be due in October of 2017 for either it'll end or it'll be approved for an extension. And that's governed by our hearing board, which is outside of the air district's control. But we had been working with Veneco to identify a temporary solution until the bankruptcy proceedings began. Since then, there's been no progress, and no site has been identified or the equipment purchased that hadn't been done before the bankruptcy proceedings started. So right now we're kind of in a holding pattern, waiting on the outcome of the bankruptcy proceedings. And, we'll obviously work with whoever's responsible for that. But we do have other monitoring that is required of the facilities that we feel is sufficient for the decommissioning project. We do have an H2S monitoring on UCSB West campus that's currently operational, and we are looking at that data. We also have the fence line monitors at the EOF facility that we are receiving data for and paying attention to make sure there's no H2S alarms. They also have some in-plant monitors at the EOF for equipment that has the potential for H2S emissions, so we pay attention to that as well. And all of those, we are, expecting them to be in place as long as the facilities are operating.
Thank you.
I think I'll just follow up with that just a bit, because we did have a conversation a couple days ago with the director of APCD made it a point that once we get our contractor hired on staff, we will be sitting down for what I suspect a day-long meeting to go through all the different elements that we and our contractor need to be aware of and comply with as we move forward, and working with APCD very closely to be able to do that. So there's a lot of coordination that has already started to happen and will continue through this process. And I'm very thankful for their time and attention to us on this.
Yeah. And I would add and tack on to that, that's very true for everything that's going on with UCSB and also the city of Goleta. We're looking at this as a big picture kind of joint operation as we all try to figure out how best to achieve sort of final goals. Everybody's got sort of the same alignment for right now, which is safety and getting everything kind of tied down. But I think big picture, this is not, this is not the sort of situation that's easily handled by any one group, any one agency. So we really do see this as sort of a larger collaborative effort. And as Jennifer said, a lot of that's going to be dictated by having some what amounts to specialty staff in the way of the engineering groups for P&A and also a project management team to come in and kind of continue this role throughout the phases that we've been talking about, phase one through phase three, that will help with everything, ongoing outreach, stakeholder groups, everything that needs to be addressed. And there's a lot. I mean, Ann and I have had conversations about issues that are kind of, and I use the word percolating, and I don't intend that to be predictive of what's happening, but these issues that they're having with old line 96, which is the line from Elwood, just outside of Elwood Marine Terminal, or Elwood Onshore Facility to the Elwood Marine Terminal. And it doesn't seem like a big thing. It's a single line, but there's a lot of issues that go into resolution of some of these outstanding things. So, what we're really looking for here, big picture, with one of the very many stakeholders being all of you in the public, is helping us sort of get a lay of the land, also sort of being there as we work through these things, because even though I feel like Jennifer said we have a great staff, we can't cover everything. It's impossible. We have a lot of offshore issues we have to deal with. There's a lot of onshore issues. There's all complicated by the bankruptcy overlay and the issue that there isn't any money for these things. So I think a lot of this really does come back to, this is a larger coordinated effort. How do we achieve a resolution that fits the needs for the parties involved to the best of our ability? That doesn't mean that everybody gets what's on their wish list. It means we try to do the very best that we can with what we have. And I think that's a goal towards going there. If there is some opportunity for, kind of that wish list, that Christmas list of how to do all this, that's great. But I mean, right now, as we've talked about, it's not just the money involved. It is a significant amount of money, but there's logistically issues, timing issues. How do we get this all done? How do we make sure that everybody's taken care of in the immediate term? And that has its own real logistical issues that we have to address. So a lot of the larger sort of aspirational goals downstream for decommissioning, removal, remediation, that's going to be continued input. And right now the roadmap isn't clear. The roadmap that we are clear on is how do we go from where we are now to being plugged and abandoned and making sure that the issues associated with the oil and gas production that create safety risks are addressed. And that's our primary concern.
Anne, Peter, do you want to... I don't know where Peter went, but right, oh, there you are.
hiding
in plain sight. Sorry.
Sure. Well, to echo what Jennifer and Seth said, that safety is our primary objective to start off this conversation with the State Lands Commission and the other agencies, the county and Venneco. Also, downloading all the information from Venneco and the staff at the facilities while we can, so that we can transfer that knowledge over to our staff, building staff, consultants, and then any future operator. So that said, on one hand, safety is the primary objective right now. But there's also then the bankruptcy issue and all the legal issues associated with the quitclaiming. And then on another track is the practical side of things, which is we might not have money, but the inspections still need to occur at the facility, and we still need the oversight at the Elwood Onshore facility, and then all the facilities onshore that don't have state oversight. So that includes the new Line 96, and that is a regional line, and that is... It exists between the Elwood Onshore facility and the city of Goleta, and then it goes up the coast to the tie-in with the Plains All American pipeline. And so that's shut in, and that's in the county's jurisdiction, which is why Peter's here, and he'll follow me and talk about that. But that line is still filled with product, and so that's not a good thing. Pipelines aren't meant to just have product sitting in it. So That's something that we're working on to address, irregardless of bankruptcies and who's going to pay for it. We're looking at the practical side of, okay, what do we do? How long do we have? And then we'll go from there. So the same thing with the old Line 96, because that wasn't properly decommissioned. And so we are testing the line and have been, and are getting results back, and then developing a plan and a cost estimate to properly decommission that pipeline. There's also a gas line that's onshore. And then there's a bunch of cables and other lines and septic and all kinds of stuff. So all of those things are all on our radar. And we're working through the issues one at a time. We have a pretty big internal team. There's a big attorney team, but there's also a big planning and building and petroleum engineering internal team. And we're working collaboratively with all the agencies to try to be thorough and complete so that we can address safety and then also the long-term issue. There's still a lot of questions that I know people have for the city of Goleta because of the onshore components were not discussed at this town hall meeting, and we will have another meeting so that we can convey the plan for the onshore facilities when we have the information. We're working through it, and we're not there yet. We don't know what the bank's going to do with the property, and we're doing everything we can to look at what might happen, and so that we're poised to be ready to go when they do make that decision. And our attorneys are go to Delaware to the hearing, so we're extremely active in the process so that we are getting timely information so that we know when and how to react. But that town hall meeting, we're going to get to it as soon as that we have the information so that we can share it with you. And that's, I think, as much information that I have, with the exception that we still have an active permit for Line 96, the decommissioning of old Line 96, and the Elwood Onshore facility. That those don't go away. They still are in effect, and we're still effectuating those permit conditions. So if there is a new change of owner operator, they go through that process with us, and they have to show us financial securities and assuredness, and they have to apply, and then we have to accept. When they do decommission and plug and abandon the wells on Holly, for whatever resources they need onshore, the city has permit authority, and so that will go likely to our planning commission. So those will be public meetings. We haven't seen the proposal yet, so we don't know exactly what that would include, but if it's needed, then that's how we'll take that public process. So we still have our permits, and we're not those don't go away, and I wanted to assure you of that safety permits, we're still in business. I think that's probably pretty good. Peter.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Peter Cantle. I'm the manager of the Energy and Minerals Group with the county's planning department. As of April 20th, we had maybe three projects. The county's piece of this is actually relatively small. The three projects actually had activities going on, though, so the impact of the quit claiming and bankruptcy basically stopped those three projects in their tracks. So the three projects include what Ann was describing as the new Line 96, and the intent was to, using Venico's term, to de-inventory that pipeline. There's about 1,700 barrels of crude in the line right now, and the intent was to basically enact over about a one-week period, taking the oil out of that, trucking it up to a point in the North County, the Santa Maria Pump Station or thereabouts, just east of the city of Santa Maria, and basically then clean the line and neutralize it, inert it with nitrogen, make it safe. As of April 20th or thereabouts, we got a stop work request from Venico, and so that permit that was actually under review at the time, the permit application that was under review at the time, has ceased. The good news is we actually have the design that went along with the permit application, so we are looking at all options to figure out what, if anything, we can do to continue with the intent to move the oil out of that pipeline. The other two projects, one is in Carpinteria. I'm happy to go into that if you want, but it's kind of out of everybody's purview here. So that leaves us with what Linda was asking about earlier, the Elwood Marine Terminal. The tanks are gone from the Marine Terminal, leaving the footprints and some of the berming and other things like that, plus the pipeline that went out offshore to what's called the pipeline end manifold. Tanks are still there? I'm sorry, I misspoke. I looked at an aerial, and I don't remember seeing them there. So in any case, we had an active environmental review process going on with that, about to issue an initial study for it. I feel like I'm ignoring you. I apologize. So I don't know where to look. In any case, an active environmental review process underway, and we're about to issue the initial study that's being done in jointly with UCSB, Coastal Commission, Lands Commission, and us. So I think four different players in that process. And as with the Line 96, that was stopped dead in its tracks with Venico's bankruptcy. So as you might expect, those projects are all now in or working. We're working, as everybody else is, through our council, trying to figure out where we stand and where we are in the line to try to get those projects back on track. Happy to answer any questions.
So that concludes the formal question part. I don't have any additional question submittals. I do want to just wrap up in a couple of with a couple of points. First is this will not be our last town hall meeting. We will be back down here. I don't know exactly when, but it will be, I suspect, after we have hired a contractor and gotten through kind of the first part of the plugging and abandonment, so we can give you a more substantive update in person. As I mentioned before, our website is being kept up to date and being populated with additional documents on a daily or weekly schedule. If you are on our more general mailing list for our commission meetings that I was describing earlier, we do have a commission meeting scheduled for next Thursday, a week from today, in Los Angeles. And there is an agenda item, staff report, basically describing everything that we talked about tonight. So it'll be the first time since all of what has happened that we have an opportunity in a public forum like our commission meeting to develop a staff report that basically narratively tells the story that we talked about tonight. I would encourage you to check out that agenda on our website again. That staff report should be posted Monday or Tuesday of next week. And it'll, I think, be a great resource and kind of summary of you know, basically what we've talked about tonight, what led up to this situation, and where we are now and what we anticipate in the future. I also want to just extend my thanks and real gratitude to the city of Goleta for allowing us to use the facility tonight and being such great hosts. Mayor, thank you very much. And to the county and to APCD, we pulled together a meeting fairly quickly, about a month after everything went down, and it was great that they could mobilize and meet with Ken and James and state land staff so that we could tell them everything we know and start that close coordination. And then finally, with our state agencies, we Ken Harris, the state oil and gas supervisor, and James, these folks that you see up here, we're talking almost on a daily basis. So I just want to really leave you with the assurance that this is a top priority for the state and for, in particular, our agencies. And again, we can be contacted anytime via email, phone. If you have any concerns, questions, thoughts, please give us a call, shoot us an email. We are all very responsive to those things. So we're here until 9 o'clock. So if anybody wants to talk offline, we're happy to. And please don't be a stranger with us. And thank you again. Thank you, Seth. Our commission meetings are webcasted, live webcasted. So you can also watch our commission meetings from the comfort of your own home. So again, just check out our website. Thank you very much.
Thanks.